Here is a special announcement. Today is Tuesday, and not, as is announced in today's Sunday Telegraph, Friday. And now, a repeat of last Thursday's performance of Monday Night is Music Night.
Here we are back again, you and I, Robert Louis Abrahamson, on Cambridge 105 Community Radio in your city, coming together to join the community gathered for another evening under lamplight. But we have only one lamplight working in the studio tonight, but I think that's enough for me to see the light. I hope so. We'll be speaking this evening under lamplight, singular, about various aspects of change, something we all experience, of course, all the time, and therefore something so important to our lives that we really must try to come to some terms with this experience. How we see the changes will determine whether we live with a calm, healthy, core center of our life, or with a frightened, defensive, and therefore bellicose hysteria or hysterical bellicosity, warlike tendencies. How's that for a choice? Well, we'll see what we can see in our time together this evening, and you are invited to attend. But I propose starting with something we started the last show with, that is the passage from T.S. Eliot's Four Quartets that gave us the title of our show. As I said last time, it's not the kind of poetry that we work at digging the meaning out of, but rather something that we open up to and allow the images and paradoxes to play on us and stir us, perhaps to a few new hints and guesses. In other words, let's just see what happens if we listen to these words again, and as before, with Alec Guinness's reading. Let's attend. Home is where one starts from.
Home is where one starts from. As we grow older, the world becomes stranger, the pattern more complicated of dead and living. Not the intense moment isolated with no before and after, but a lifetime burning in every moment, and not the lifetime of one man only, but of old stones that cannot be deciphered. There is a time for the evening under starlight, a time for the evening under lamplight, the evening with the photograph album. Love is most nearly itself when here and now cease to matter. Old men ought to be explorers. Here and there does not matter. We must be still and still moving into another intensity for a further union, a deeper communion through the dark cold and the empty desolation, the wave cry, the wind cry, the vast waters of the petrel and the porpoise. In my end is my beginning.
It's like some sort of game, isn't it? Home is where one starts from. Go. And then we enter the world of changes, growing older, the world becoming stranger, more complicated of dead and living, he says. Those are the changes, the things we have left behind us, the things still here with us, nothing isolated, but all interconnected, a lifetime burning in every moment, the lifetime of all of us, buffeting us all around. But then we come to those moments of stillness, the time for the evening under starlight, and the evening under lamplight, perhaps looking at the photograph album with its pictures of the past, those people and places we are still and always connected with, part of us. This picture of Mummy and Daddy and baby me under a tree in a field that's now a housing development, or this picture taken on holiday, I now forget where it was, but something in me resonates. All these pictures no longer are part of the past, but are here present, part of me now, where I can feel love. If they are only things of the past, then I can't love them, just sentimentalize them. Love is most nearly itself, our passage says, when here and now cease to matter. And in such a moment, then, we allow ourselves to be still and still moving into another intensity, a further union, a deeper communion. Not trying to control things, but dying to the things of the past so we can be present in the moment, since in my end is my beginning. Well, as Eliot says elsewhere in the poem, that was a way of putting it, not very satisfactory. Here's another way to put it. Was The Kinks with Picture Book from the wonderful 1968 album The Village Green Preservation Society. As we're sat by the fireside, a pondering on Picture Book, pictures of your mama taken by your papa a long time ago. People with each other to to prove they love each other a long time ago. A picture of you in your birthday suit, sat in the sun on a hot afternoon. Picture book. Your mama and your papa and fat old Uncle Charlie out boozing with their friends. A holiday in August outside a bed and breakfast in sunny Southend. And when you were just a baby, those days when you were happy a long time ago. Oops, a little sentimentalizing. But you see, what makes this song so powerful in its humble way, it's not a great song, is Ray Davies' use of concrete details of the kinds of pictures we're looking at as we sit this evening with the photograph album. And these picture books are slightly different from going to a gallery and spending time, not necessarily under lamplight, with pictures at an exhibition, promenading from one picture to the next. And so now let's look at change, or changes. We probably want to look at changes in our personal life and changes in our larger social and cultural world. And I suppose before we go further, we need to bring in David Bowie, whose changes can give us a sparking theme song for our discussion.
Waiting for, and my time was running wild, a million dead-end streets, and every time I thought I got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me, but I've never caught a glimpse of how the others must see the faker. I'm much too fast to take that test.
Changes. Turn and face the strain.
Changes. Don't wanna be a richer man.
Changes. Turn and face the strain.
Changes. There's gonna have to be a different man. Time may change me. Sides, but never leave the stream of warm and permanent sand. So the days float through my eyes, but still the days seem the same. And these children that you spit on as they try to change their worlds are immune to your consultations. They're quite aware of what they're going through.
Changes.
Turn and face the strain. Changes. Don't tell them to grow up out of it.
Changes. Turn and face the strain.
Changes. Where's your shame? You've left us up to her next to me. Time may change me, but you can't twist time. Strange fascination. Changes are taking the base I'm
And that, in fact, was David Bowie on the sax, taking us to the end of the track. I can't put words to the way this song attracts me and caught me from the very start. It is certainly something in the music, the rhythm, the pacing, the voice, the backups, which seem to weave in and out. Perhaps we can call it a kind of restless itchiness. And it wasn't really the words, since I had only a vague grasp of the lyrics until just now when I've been listening again to the song for our show here. But how impressive are the lyrics? In fact, I'm going to stop the show right now to indulge in a little digression on the lyrics. Here's the first verse. Watch the itchy restlessness here. I still don't know what I was waiting for, and my time was running wild. These lines grow upon me the more I go over them. There's the restlessness in the past, when I was waiting for something but didn't know what it was, and the restlessness of the present, when I still don't know what I was waiting for. But my time was running wild. Does that mean that I was spending my time running wild? Parties, drugs, restless adventures on motorcycles, that sort of thing? Or does it mean that time itself was running wild, out of control? Things were happening that I couldn't control or make sense of. I couldn't grab hold of anything that was coming along. Well, the lines can carry both senses, of course, and more. A million dead-end streets, and every time I thought I'd got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me. Is that like Dante waking to find himself lost? Or the prodigal son returning to himself? In any case, it's a weird image, turning to face yourself. Who are you? What are you doing? I turned myself to face me, but I've never caught a glimpse. A glimpse of what? Of who I am? No, a glimpse of how the others must see the faker. I'm much too fast to take that test. Here I am, the faker. Well, like all of us. And maybe if I can see who I am, maybe others can see, at least can see who I'm not. I'm not what I seem to be on the surface. But I change so fast that I can't even see what this is that I am on the surface. Well, if I can't pin myself down and be aware of what's going on, at least I can be aware of the changes and turn and face the strange changes.
Changes.
Turn and face the strange
changes.
Wanna be a richer man?
Changes.
Turn and face the strange
changes.
It's gonna have to be a different man. Time may change me, but I can't trace time.
Just gonna have to be a different man. Different from the man I've been in the past. Different too from the man I thought or I hoped I was, or even different from the faker others must see me as. Second verse, with the startling image, I watch the ripples change their size but never leave the stream. Oh, it seems that although the ripples change their size, they're still contained within the stream. That's some kind of boundary that can give us some grasp on the changes. Heraclitus, the ancient Greek philosopher, said, we cannot step into the same stream twice, since it is always changing. And yet we recognize that it's still the same stream. That's a paradox, but a paradox we can easily live with. But wait, here, the stream that the changing ripples are contained in turns out not to be so comforting, since this is the stream of warm impermanence. Impermanence is not very comforting. It's a nervousness, but at least it's warm. And so the days float through my eyes, but still the days seem the same. Constant change, constant consistency. And then the song makes a dramatic shift, dramatic in the sense that there's more than one person present here. He turns to talk to someone else. And these children that you spit on as they try to change their worlds are immune to your consultations. They're quite aware of what they're going through. There's something social and political going on now, something quite relevant to the late 60s when the song was written, with all the young people turning their back on their parents' values, idealistically striving to change the world, end the war in Vietnam, promote civil rights, undermine the consumerist, capitalist world they grew up in. This is a different kind of change, but we must turn and face these strange changes too, as must the parents, of course. Don't tell them to grow up and out of it. Where's your shame? You've left us up to our necks in it.
Changes.
Turn and face the strange.
Changes.
Don't tell them to grow up and out of it.
Changes.
Turn and face the strange.
Changes.
Where's your shame? You've left us up to our necks.
All right. Then the drama shifts again, and he addresses those young people so caught up in their idealism and the self-assured, narrow vision that can come from that. Look out, you rock and rollers. Pretty soon you're going to get older. That is, you'll change in a different way and want to spit on the new generation coming up next with their different set of changes. Let's be a little humbler. Time may change me, to be sure, but I can't trace time. I can't predict the next set of changes. All I can do is turn and face the strangeness of these changes. And let that be some good consolation for us, wherever, whoever we are, right? All right, and then there's the other classic song about change coming out a few years before Bowie's song and announcing these years of radical changes. It's like some sort of camp gathering, as the singer calls his listeners to gather around, people, wherever you roam. They, too, have to turn and face the changes, but in a less itchy, more ominous way.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing. Some writers and critics who prophesize with your pen, and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. And there's no telling who that it's naming. For the loser now will be later to win. For the times, they are a-changing. Senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't lock up the hall. For he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. The battle outside raging will soon shake your windows and rattle your walls. For the times, they are a-changing. Mothers and fathers throughout the land, and don't criticize what you can't understand. Your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. Your old road is rapidly aging. Please get out of the new one if you can't lend your hand. For the times, they are a-changing. Thank you.
line it is drawn, the curse it is cast. The slow one now will later be fast, as the present now will later be past. The order is rapidly fading, and the first one now will later be last, for the times they are a-changing.
Before we even look at the meaning, it's always good to look at the form. Each stanza has four lines rhyming with each other. This works on us, I think, as some kind of change to what we expect, a kind of overwhelming change, just like these waters that have grown higher and stormier around us. Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown. Okay, we feel. Here's a couplet. Two lines rhyming together. Now for the next set of rhymes, but that's not what we get. We're hit with another unexpected rhyme of the same rhyme. And accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. But he doesn't stop there. There's one more rhyme, but this time there's a short line before it with a different rhyme. A rhyme that's going to set up the final word of the stanza, changing. If your time is worth saving. Okay, if your time is worth saving, then, and here comes that main rhyme again, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. Roam, groan, bone, stone. And then finally comes the explanation and the refrain, picking up the word saving. For the times they are a-changing. Changing and saving are called loose rhymes or near rhymes. Attend to the way this works in the rest of the stanzas. Come writers and critics who prophesize with your pen, and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again, and don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin, and there's no telling who that it's naming, for the loser now will be later to win, for the times they are a-changin'. Come, senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't block up the hall, for he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. There's the battle outside, and it's raging. It'll soon shake your windows and rattle your walls, for the times they are a-changing. Come, mothers and fathers throughout the land, and don't criticize what you can't understand. Your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. Your old road is rapidly aging. Please get out of the new one if you can't lend your hand, for the times they are a-changing. The line it is drawn, the curse it is cast, the slow one now will later be fast, as the present now will later be past. The order is rapidly fading, and the first one now will be later be last, for the times they are a-changing. You see, I think if you pay attention to the form of the poem of the song, before you even think of the meaning of the words, you can get it much deeper inside you. So maybe that helped you. Now, Christopher Ricks wrote an ingenious book on Dylan, Dylan's Visions of Sins, which is not really about sins at all, but about literary wit and finesse. And he spends time playing with the phrasing of this refrain, speculating on how it evolved. He sets it up like this. Times change. The times change. The times are changing. The times are a-changing. The times they are a-changing. For the times they are a-changing. And he points out that this are-changing tense is sometimes called the continuous present tense, reminding us that times are continuously changing, never stopping. Here are a few other things Rick says about the song. He notices that in the beginning, this gatherer of people puts it to his audience that they already know what's going on. All they have to do now is admit that the waters around them have grown. Now, there's also the odd line, if your time to you is worth saving. Surely we would expect someone to say if your life is worth saving. But these are people who equate their life with their time. And if they can't keep a grasp on the time or the times, then they feel that their very lives are in danger. They think if they save their time, they'll also save their life. But the only way to save your life is to lose it. Our only salvation is through paradox, such as the one tied in with the final thought of the song, rephrasing one of Jesus' poems, "Many that are first shall be last, and the last shall be first." These are my thoughts, not Rix's thoughts. Christopher Rix goes on much longer about this song. His discussion takes up 12 pages, in fact. But we'll move on for the moment. We'll just let this song resonate with us, with its admonition that the times are always a-changing, and we're fools, or worse, if we think we can stand in the way. If we do, we'll just sink like a stone, for the times, they are a-changing. But here's one thing that doesn't change, even if we have changed from Tuesday nights to Wednesday nights. This is Evening Under Lamplight with your host, Robert Louis Abrahamson, on Cambridge 105. And as the man says,
when the day comes to an end, he invites you to attend Evening Under Lamplight. It's Cambridge 105. Community radio in your city.
Thank you. Now, where do we go from here? Now that we've taken upon ourselves such an enormous topic as change. Well, we might want to look at change and fear. Change is frightening because with the change, we might lose those very things we have based our lives on, our family, our money, the old technology that we knew how to operate, the social world we have become used to, or we have accommodated ourselves to. Fear arises from the unknown, and change is all about the unknown. If you can't handle change and the unknown, I'm afraid you become a prey to fundamentalism, reducing this multifaceted world into simple black and white, right and wrong, which is not only destructive, but impoverishing. Fundamentalists' lives are poor in all the ways that really count. Literalists are varieties of fundamentalists, and their lives, contained within one rigid way of looking at things, is also woefully impoverished, at war with nuance and change. But what happens if we just accept change, if we turn and face the changes? It's one of the chief principles of Buddhism, after all, that everything changes, and the Buddhists always know what they're talking about. But accepting that change happens doesn't mean that we necessarily have to approve of changes, specific changes that come. We cannot oppose change itself, but we certainly can take a stand against specific changes. In fact, we must. Another temptation is to resist change by yearning to go back into the past as though the past was any better than the present. Thus you get political slogans like the infamous "Make America Great Again." It would be a worthy slogan to say "Make America Great," but to add that "again" turns it all into a delusion, typical of our whole political attitude steeped in delusions from one end to the other. I won't even waste our time by elaborating on how fallacious it is to speak about making America great again. Of course, there are also circumstances, lots of them, when we avidly wish for change to come and wipe out the present conditions. That is, when things are miserable, we look forward to the inevitable change that's going to come, a change that will deliver us, as we hope and expect. Let's have a break and attend to Sam Cooke's wonderful voice, speaking out from a world of pain and sorrow, looking ahead, knowing that a change is going to come, even if it's a long time coming. Attend to the quiet opening crescendo and see if he doesn't get you right in the guts when his voice comes in.
a little tent. Oh, and just like the river I've been running ever since. It's been a long, a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. 'Cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Then I go to my brother. I say, brother, help me, please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. And oh, there have been times that I thought I couldn't last for long. But I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
That's a beautiful, moving song in so many ways. Sam Cooke, A Change Is Gonna Come. The last time I played the song was to open the show on the week after Obama was elected. What a lot of changes since that week. All right, what about another kind of change? One that we all inevitably have to face, the change of personal aging. Well, there is one way to avoid that kind of change, a gruesome way that Humpty Dumpty hints at to Alice in Through the Looking Glass. You may remember that Humpty Dumpty, sitting proudly on the wall, looks down at Alice and asks her age. 7 years and 6 months, she says. An uncomfortable sort of age, Humpty Dumpty replies. Now, if you asked my advice, I'd have said leave off at 7. But it's too late now. Yes, it's too late to stop the changes inevitable with aging. And as Alice replies, one can't help growing older. One can't, perhaps, said Humpty Dumpty, but two can. With proper assistance, you might have left off at 7. Martin Gardner remarks, this is the subtlest, grimmest, easiest to miss quip in the Alice books. What it implies, of course, is that the only way to stop experiencing the changes of time is to die with proper assistance. Well, yes, that's one way, certainly. But the question for us living anyway, is not how to avoid change, but how to deal with the inevitable change that comes our way. We can clutch at the way things are right now, but we can never hold on to things for long. Even Miss Havisham in Dickens's Great Expectations has to let go sometime. She's been sitting there for years and years after having been jilted on her wedding day, sitting there in her wedding dress with the wedding feast on the table before her, dried out, covered in dust and cobwebs. No change there, except for that drying out and cobwebbery, and not just on the table, but to herself as well, as she sits there looking like a cross between a waxwork statue and a skeleton. She calls her decayed mansion Satis House. That is enough house. Enough and no more change, she means. She has done all she could to make time stand still, and has even stopped all the clocks at 8:40, the time she had been jilted. But of course time has the last say, and things do change when her dried-out dress catches fire and the house, which has surely seen enough, is burnt down and she dies from severe burns. But not before the final, essential change within her, that supreme kind of change we all desire, her transformation. She repents, and she asks forgiveness for the harm she has done over the past years of bitterness. So even for Miss Havisham, the clutching lets go, allowing change to clear out the rubbish and make way for at least a few moments of healthy living. Now, suppose we do turn and face the changes and admit that the waters around us have grown, but then, still controlled by fear, we frantically search for a way to stay safe amidst all the changes. I remember Paul Fussell, my PhD advisor, living in a large six-bedroom house in a few acres of gardens on a quiet lane in Princeton, telling me, "Robert Louis, what you want to do is get a nice job at a posh boarding school and find a nice house to settle into and spend the rest of your career doing the things you love." Get behind me, Satan. I could feel the attraction, but even then I realized that this was a cowardly way, a way of running from vicissitudes. That word means changes. But Paul had had enough of changes in the war, thank you, and it was part of his emotional therapy to hide himself away from as much change as he could manage. After the election, the pseudo-election of Donald Trump, a friend in America asked me frantically where she could escape to. "Is Scotland a good place?" she asked. I told her about the weather. Oh, she hadn't realized that it gets cold and rainy there. I could have played with her more, listing all the places that seem safe from vicissitudes and then pointing out the disadvantages too. Because after all, every place is both good and bad. Change is no respecter of places. You don't choose to settle in a new place because you hope it will be a refuge. Unless you really are a refugee, and that's a different story. Then you go anywhere you can. Any change is better than the place you're in. No, you choose to settle in a place because you actively love it. That makes sense, doesn't it? And then all those people who try to run from the changes of time to their own bodies. Here's another memory. Several years ago, I had a bushy beard. I suppose it was getting a bit grizzled in places, I can't remember for sure. But I recall someone saying to me that if I shaved it off, I'd look 10 years younger. "Why should I want to look 10 years younger?" I countered, jauntily acting as if I was quite cool with the changes that made me look older. But a few years later, when I did shave it off, I can remember that my main motive was, yes, to look younger, to reverse the changes of time. And then there's all the plastic surgery to reverse the changes, or the rigorous exercise regimes to keep the body of a young person for a little while longer, at least. Well, we all know about that. Teenagers want to speed up the changes of time and look mature. At a certain age, who knows exactly when, we want to reverse the changes of time. But suppose we really did ease into these changes and just accepted them. Look, here's Ram Dass in his early 60s, I think, talking about coming to terms with the nature of aging.
The nature of aging has to do with change, obviously. And the nature of changing phenomena is that they are endlessly fascinating. We get fascinated with that which changes. When it starts to happen to who we think we are, the fascination turns into fear. The first level of change that we have to attend to is the physical nature of change with aging. As I read this list, it'll be very familiar to many of you. Arthritis, neuritis, insomnia, constipation, poor circulation, high blood pressure. I went to the doctor the other day and he said, "Your blood pressure's high." He said, "Would you do whatever you do to lower it?" I said, "What I do to lower it is not visit doctors' offices. That's what I do. It's called the white coat blood pressure." Nervous tension, atrophying muscles, bones breaking easily, motor nerve signals slower, lungs less oxygen, loss of mobility, can't hear as well, can't see as well, run out of steam sooner, days when you feel sick and nauseous, questions about continence. Now, those changes themselves are so fascinating that I can take you to whole societies in the Sun in St. Petersburg, for example, where there are hundreds of thousands of people who are endlessly reciting the lists of these changes to each other. Mostly their own fascinate them the most. However, they do listen to each other so that they can give fair hearing, so that they can have time for their own. But you don't say, "How are you?" And that's real, and it's very real, and it's very painful and very confusing, because the body just doesn't do what it used to do, and it does a lot of things it didn't used to do. And while you can see how real that is for those people, when you put in the places of those people who are the same age, now just put on those benches Einstein, Arthur Rubinstein, Pablo Picasso, Rembrandt, George Bernard Shaw, Monet, Chagall, Bob Hope, Grandma Moses, and Margaret Mead. And you can't imagine them sitting around doing that same thing, can you? So it's clearly not age, is it? It's where the mind grabs hold and which changes it focuses on, right? I mean, just that's a... Now, around that one is so endlessly fascinating, we've developed a great deal of humor around it. Johnny Carson, soon to be former Johnny Carson, says, "I know a man who gave up smoking, drinking, sex, and rich food. He was healthy right up to the time he committed suicide." Groucho Marx said, "In middle age, you go to bed knowing you'll hoping you'll feel better in the morning. In old age, you go to bed hoping you'll have a morning." Robert Benchley said, "I feel fine at 50, except for an occasional heart attack." These identifications are so intense, it's extremely hard to break them. But as you heard, you could feel that it was possible to lift out of them and to see the body as a vehicle. In the East, you see the body as something you have incarnated into, and it's a vehicle that it's like a spacesuit for working on this planet, on this plane of reality. And your spacesuit, I have two cars. One is 19 years old and one's 18 years old. Now, to me, they're new cars because I remember them. But one of them just failed the smog test in California, and it's... And I realize now that it's just a car. But to be able to say it's just a body in the same way, because most of us have identified so with the... It's like identifying with your car, and somebody says, how do you do, who are you? And you say, I'm a Ford. You know, like I'm an arthritic, you know, like I have gout. How do you do? I have gout, you know. It's the same thing. You're identifying with the vehicle. I mean, it's a charming old vehicle. It's just falling apart, but I can, with a little tender care, I can keep it together for a little while longer.
Where did the spring go? Where did the trees go? Where did the sun go? Where did the bluebirds fly? Why did the rainbow turn into shadows? Why am I cold now? Why does my skin sag? Why ain't my back straight? Why do my feet ache? Where did my youth go? Where did my life go? Remember walking in the rain and getting soaking wet. Now I've got rheumatic pain and I really do regret it. Where did my teeth go? Where did my muscles go? Where did my shoulders go? Where did my chest go? When you were loving me, you were just using me. You were employing me, you were destroying me. Now all I've got are varicose veins. Where did the spring go? Where did my hormones go? Where did my energy go? Where did my go? Where did the pleasure go? Where did my hair go? Remember my teeth go? Where did my hair go? Where did my shoulders go? Where did my chest go? Where did my hormones go? Where did my go? Where did my energy go? Where did my skin go? Where did my muscles go? Where did my liver go? Where did my heart go? Where did my bones go?
Okay, yes. We followed Ram Dass with the second appearance from the Kinks this evening under lamplight, a song called Where Did My Spring Go? Just that kind of anxiety we all feel at some level, but that Ram Dass is trying to help us with humor and wisdom to rise above. And by the way, Ray Davies was just in his mid-20s when he wrote that song. He's always good for songs of anxiety for all ages. And so as Ram Dass wants us to realize, we fear change because we identify ourselves with these bodies that are constantly changing. But if we can get in touch with that part of ourselves that is timeless, then we can turn and face the changes without fear. Ram Dass suggests we see our body as a vehicle we are inhabiting, not as our true self, and thus as the body changes, we can watch the changes and not panic. We can even feel an affection for the changes, which are part of us, yet not part of us. Yeah, we'll feel the pain when these changes come that hurt us, but we will be saved from suffering from the changes because that fear and anxiety will no longer be there with us. It all depends, he says, on where the mind grabs hold and which changes it focuses on. Look, what do I know? I'm just stuck in the middle of these changes, just like everyone else. And all I can do is bring out some of these poems, songs, ideas, and invite us to sit together under lamplight and attend to them, waiting to see how they may or may not catch us. If I offered any more than that, I'd be dishonest. You would be turned off, or worse, seduced into my dishonesty, and the show would collapse. And that's it. That's it for our coming together this evening under lamplight. I am unchanging, maybe, I don't know, Robert Louis Abrahamson. And this has been our evening under lamplight on Cambridge 105. Perhaps we might say our evening with the photograph album in that changeless space where time and place cease to matter. The place where, as the poem says, love is most nearly itself. But time does break in, and change is waiting in the wings, ready to push us out of here. But first, let's attend, in closing, to Brahms' Waltz No. 15, played by Richard Steiner.